the AAC. I believe AAC meetings should be widely promoted for participation among the interested parties and stakeholders involved in the airport. This includes commercial license holders, leaseholders and tenants, Garmin, the National Guard is already representative, flight clubs, and emergency management professionals in Marion County, Polk County, and the State Office of Emergency Management. I feel strongly that the AAC meetings must allow for live public participation. We're all doing this from the city council to nonprofits holding forums. This advisory board should be able to hear testimony, see presentations, and ask questions of those in attendance. I would ask that you pass a motion to advise city council of your desire to no longer exclude live public participation. Thank you for listening, Brent DeHart. So having read that, I guess first off, I want to thank Brent for his comments and his participation both here and in the past. It's good to have his views represented. I also want to say that I actually agree with his sentiment, particularly, you know, I think live participation in these meetings is important. I think the current mode of operating where we're asking for comments to be submitted prior to the meeting, but the people aren't allowed to speak live, I think that's kind of an impediment to open discussion and contrary to, I think, the city's desire to have open public participation in meetings. I also believe that these restrictions are kind of more procedural than mandated. I think they're, unless I'm incorrect, they're intended to deal with some of these COVID concerns, and there may be some technological reasons why we're not able to do it. So I guess I don't know if we need to do any sort of motion to ask to be allowed to do this, but I would really like to see what options we have to support more open participation in the meetings. And I guess I'll take any thoughts on that. Yeah, Neil.
I guess this question really is directed towards John. How do you feel about having in-person advisory commission meetings for the next quarter or at least in the quarter after that and beyond?
Well, it doesn't matter how I feel. I'm required to follow the city guidance, and the city's following the state's guidance. And so until we're told that we can do otherwise, this is the way that we handle our boards and commissions meetings. So I don't have any control over how these are done. Certainly, you know, the sentiment can be sent to the city, whether it's through me or whether the commission. I guess I'd be cautious on voting on anything since there's no action items on the agenda that weren't publicly noticed. But having said all of that, that doesn't stop anybody from sending information to your city councilor, to the mayor, to the entire city council, and speaking your mind on this issue. If you think there's a better way the city can handle it or they should be handling it, then by all means, that's one method. So. I work for the city, so I'll do it the way the city says we need to do it.
Yeah, I guess I was wondering if you had any kind of pulse on what you think opening up may happen.
I don't know. I mean, following the governor's, you know, risk levels as they yo-yo sort of up and down, and when I can eat in a restaurant and things like that, I think it's going to drive a lot of. I mean, it's still tricky for us to even have in-person meetings. They're limited to. Absolutely have to have in-person meetings, otherwise this is the preferred method, either by telephone or via Zoom meeting or whatever. So, and people are getting vaccinated, I think we're moving in the right direction, but how we decide to handle it, I think probably my personal sentiment, my personal belief is that, you know, in-person meetings are more productive. I mean, when people can gather and people can come and talk and people can visit and all of those sorts of things, it's different than this venue here where we have kind of the Brady Bunch squares and we can't see who's in the audience, we can't make contact with anybody, it's very distant. That's how it's been the last year. I think that a lot of people feel that way. I've heard that throughout the city. We do a lot of our city meetings this way now, and people miss each other and miss sort of that public contact. But all of that aside, I don't know. I don't have a sense for when that'll happen. I don't feel like it's any time in the near future. I think that the city will move towards a slow opening over the next few months as the state starts moving towards all of that, and we'll just kind of follow suit is the sense that I'm getting.
Okay, thank you, John.
Any other thoughts? I guess personally, it seems like, and I've seen this, you know, my personal experience dealing with school district communications and other meetings like that, they do manage to have chat options in some of these meetings that would allow people to at least submit written comments, if not verbal comments, and then we could address them that way. I guess I don't know if maybe the best thing to do would be to bring that concern back to the city folks and see if there are other options that the current technology would allow us to do. Something short maybe of meeting in person, which I think we all want to get to. But
I think at a minimum, Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to send an email downtown and at least express the concerns that we heard tonight, ask the question if there's another way or if there's a movement towards allowing some public participation. What I would like to say and make sure everybody's aware is that this is not my decision. I don't decide to do it this way. This is just how we do it. So.
Sure.
I know that the city council meetings and a couple of the other meetings are done differently with public. We just did one the other night with the city council workshop where there was, you know, a lot of public attendance there. So I know it's possible. I just don't know what the dividing line is or how those decisions are made. So I can certainly do that. And then again, and anyone else is certainly welcome to contact city council and city management with any other concerns.
Okay. Any further discussion of Brent's input? All right. Yeah, seeing none, could we move on to the next agenda item, which would be reports? And we have the Tower Chief report. I don't know if the Tower Chief's present to brief, but could you cover that? Yeah.
He is not, Mr. Chairman. He sent me his notes. I believe he's actually still training up in the tower, but he may be working right now. But he sent me some notes to share with the commission. For the quarter, their traffic counts for the first quarter of 2021, January through March, they count 9,074 operations, their busy day being 300 operations. Of course, their operations include overflights, which we don't count because overflights don't land at the airport. Our year-to-date numbers so far are 8,749, which is a 10% increase over the first 3 months of last year, which is fantastic. They had 7,959 for the first 3 months of 2020. In fact, March, we had 3,965 operations. That's the most operations in March I could find going back 12 years. So we had a very robust March, which is a good sign. Other information he provided, air traffic mandatory occurrence reports. These are occurrences that happen where they're required to report to the FAA. Why they're called mandatory occurrence reports. They had three. On January 19th, they had a Cessna 172 that entered Taxiway Charlie without clearance. Helicopter landing, Taxiway Charlie was instructed to avoid the aircraft on Taxiway Charlie and the helicopter landed without incident. The second was on March 14th. The Beach 36 crossed the old line, old short line for runway 34 without clearance. There was an aircraft on final to 34 that was sent around. And then on March 26th, an H-60 helicopter crossed the old short lines for runway 34 at taxiway November. We had one incident on March 9th, a PA-18, a Piper 18 landing runway 34 veered off the runway into the grass area. There were no injuries. ARC was dispatched at an alert 3, but again, no injuries or aircraft damage. Other than that, the only information Rob wanted to share was his staffing changes. He had his new hire, Don, concluded training, was certified on January 16th. And then he has another new hire, Kelly, who started training on March 8th. And is currently in training now, so they've got a lot of new folks up there. And that was the only information Rob sent. If there's any questions or anything else you'd like to know, I can take notes and get back to him. That was all he sent.
Any questions from the Tower Chief's report?
What was the reason for the airplane diverting to the grass area?
I don't have a reason for why. It just says that it did.
I guess the grass is greener.
Yeah, I don't have any more information about that.
Thank you.
Any other questions? All right, the next report would be the airport manager report. And I know John distributed the report prior to the meeting. It was in the meeting materials. If folks had a chance to look at that, are there questions for John related to that report?
And I would say, Mr. Chairman, I have some, I have a kind of a supplemental report that I'll add on to that.
Okay, yeah, I was going to ask.
From the last week. So, but if anyone has questions in advance, I can answer those. Or I go through the rest of my report and we can do a Q&A at the end. And maybe some questions off of some of the information I'm ready to provide.
Right. If there aren't any questions on what's distributed, yeah, I would like to just let folks know. And I think, I don't know how many watched, but on Monday, there was a Salem Council workshop on the airport. And I unfortunately couldn't attend, but I was able to do my homework before the meeting and watch the YouTube video of it. There was a lot of interesting discussion there. And so I was hoping, John, maybe if you could give an out brief and maybe talk a little bit about what was presented and if there was any differences from what you'd shared with us in January.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So I actually have a couple of updates from the report that I sent out with the packet last week. One of the things I noted was under air service development. I did note in there that a small contingent of Air Service Development Committee members went to St. George, Utah in January that I'd have more information to provide in this meeting. So they have provided a little bit more information on the outcome of that meeting. So if I can, I'd just read what they sent me.
Sure.
excuse me. And Brent DeHart did want to present during this meeting, but as you indicated, the COVID restrictions prevented us from having him do a presentation this evening. So. Part of this came from him and part came from the Air Service Development Consultant, Volair. But two representatives from the Fly Salem Committee, along with the Volair Aviation Consultant, traveled to St. George, Utah, which is where SkyWest headquarters is, to meet with the Director of Network Planning and his team. The Salem team presented updated data on Salem's position in the pandemic and worked to position Salem as an option for potential available aircraft time as the pandemic comes to an end. SkyWest is receptive to the idea of a San Francisco service on the United Code, which it could add at its own risk. It is currently working through its fleet plan for the next 12 months and working to determine the number of pilots it will have available. As network carriers begin to grow again, they are hiring pilots from airlines like SkyWest, putting added pressure on regional airline staff. The committee will be meeting with SkyWest again in June and hopes to have more clarity on a potential timeframe for service. It is worth noting that Salem's committee were the only people that SkyWest met with in January, and it was in person on their closed campus as opposed to a virtual conference call. So that tells us they are serious and recognize Salem's market potential. So I wanted to add that along with the air service development piece that I added in my written report. If there's any specific questions on that, I can certainly take notes on those since they obviously can't respond right now. And I can get responses if anybody has any questions.
So regarding, I guess you indicated that Brent wanted to present. Is that something we could, you know, pick up at the next meeting? Or I don't know if that's not timely enough for him. Or I'm just wondering, you know, it seems like we ought to be able to take presentations,
Yeah, my hope would be if they're going to revisit in June, that maybe in the July AAC meeting we'll have sorted through the ability to invite someone to this meeting as a presenter. Going back to the previous discussion, you know, why we can't invite one or two people to do a presentation along with this group here. I'm not sure why we can't send that Zoom invite out, but we'll sort through those things, and maybe in the July meeting we can, or certainly if there's a need to call a special AAC meeting, we can always do that. There's a need for a presentation. But short of that, that was the update that they asked me to provide to the AAC. As a reminder, and I have it in my written form, that if the Small Community Air Service Development Grant application, which we now have in, if we happen to be awarded a grant anytime, whether it's between now and the next AAC meeting, that we will have to have a special AAC meeting so that we'll have to return to council to accept that grant. That was part of the original deal with the council, is that we could apply, but we couldn't accept without coming back to council and explaining to them if there was any restrictions or whatever the grant required. So that may be required too.
Could you remind me the date for when we expect to hear that back and when we might need to be thinking about
it? Well, it depends. Historically, those awards take anywhere from 6 to 12 months. But the feedback that we've gotten from our air service development consultant is that they're anxious to get these dollars out into the communities, along with infrastructure bills and some of these other funds. So they're hoping that in 90 days, and we submitted that, I believe it was in early March. So April, May, June. You know, maybe sometime in June. So optimistically, sometime in the next 60 days. But again, it's the federal government, so there's that will require, more than likely, that will require a special AAC meeting so that you can provide a recommendation to council. After we've had a chance to read through the grant, assuming that we receive an award, of course. I did mention in my written report that there were 77 applications submitted seeking $57.5 million for a program that has $18 million to distribute, so roughly about one third of the requests. So it's, you know, we don't know. We're asking for $850,000 to support service to the Bay Area as a revenue guarantee. So we're hopeful that we'll hear something about that in the next couple of months. Well, that's all I had for air service development updates in addition to what I already provided. But if there are any other questions, I can send those off to Brent and to the air service development consultant if needed.
All right. Well, what was the next item you wanted?
Okay. A couple other things. So in terms of terminal business operations, with the COVID pandemic, we had some, the Groom Airport Shuttle had stopped service back in March. They are actually just now beginning to start service, limited operations PDX on May 3rd, with only 10 round trips per day and no staffing in the terminal initially, as they get ramped up. But that's good news that they are starting up again. And then Avis Budget Rental Car had gone to reduced hours. They were closing up at about 1 o'clock every afternoon. They've actually been very, very busy the last couple of months. And so they're going back to full regular business hours on May 1st. So I think these are just positive signs of businesses coming out of the pandemic. And then finally, I just wanted to touch on some things related to the City Council workshop on Monday night. We talked about this in the January AAC meeting. Some of you were able to attend the workshop on Monday night, some weren't. But I thought I'd provide some feedback and some follow-up. So that meeting was postponed, obviously, several times, as you'll recall, since January of 2020. So it took us almost 14 months to get to the City Council. The purpose of that workshop, just to summarize, was twofold. One was to introduce several new City Council members to the airport, to explain to them what we do, who operates here, the economic benefits of the community, how much federal investment's been made in this airport, what restrictions that places on the city, what things we can and cannot do, which I think is important for them to know, and that sort of thing. So that was kind of the first part of the presentation. We went through some trends in aviation about, you know, clean air fuels and electric aircraft and some of those sorts of developments. And then the meat of it was really we needed to update the City Council on FAA's concerns related to issues surrounding the airport's second runway. Specifically about clearing the obstacles in the approaches, realigning our taxiways, and preserving enough property for future development. And we also wanted to remind council that nearly a decade ago, the runway was deemed ineligible for federal funding. So all future capital improvement projects on that runway would be 100% city funded. As such, the FAA asked the city to look at its alternatives in a master plan update. And they moved funding for that master plan update, which we originally had planned for 2025 up to 2022. And we were seeking council support in this workshop on Monday night to move forward with a master planning effort next year. So that was all we were really there to do. So I wanted to make a couple points of clarification, primarily based on some feedback that I received almost immediately after the meeting. And some, you know, a little bit of confusion. I mean, obviously a lot of people are hearing some of this information for the first time. Some of you folks heard it in January, but not a lot of people attended the AAC meeting. And as Brent pointed out in his comments, you know, I think we need to do a better job of reaching out to people and inviting people to future meetings. Certainly something we can look at. But I want to make sure folks understand that we did not make any planning decisions. We did not make any capital improvement decisions. We did not make any future airport layout decisions. We didn't do any of that. That was not the purpose of the workshop. The purpose of the workshop was to move to a master planning process, which is where all of that stuff happens. And the purpose of the workshop was information only, so that the city council was in support of moving towards that master planning process next year, in support of where the FAA thinks we should go. The last master plan was updated in 2012, and typically airports update their master plans about every decade to 15 years anyway, so we were getting close to time. They were just sort of nudging us along a little further because of these red flags that existed on the second runway. excuse me. The second point I wanted to make is that the council workshop was not some strategic planning behind closed doors. It was made a long time ago that we suddenly just thrust on the public. In fact, my last in-person planning meeting with the FAA up in Seattle in their offices was late November of 2019, when these red flags and issues were brought up. So we immediately made plans to have this workshop in January of 2020, so 2 months later, which at the same time, if you recall, is when we were intending to take the business plan as an information report. And then since January of 2020, we've been delayed up until Monday night. So, you know, between the homeless crisis and the pandemics and the riots and the wildfires and the ice storm, city councils had competing priorities. And so we just had delayed is all it was. So for folks that think that we've been planning this for the last couple of years and just thrusting changes on the airport, that's not what we're doing. I also want to talk a little bit about ineligibility of the runway, because I mean, a lot of folks, and it's hard to get, you can't get into this detail in city council workshops. It's got to be at a little bit of a higher level, but ineligibility of surfaces on an airport or in particular our runway is not a determination that we make. It's a determination that's made in master plans, and it's based on several factors, but it primarily has to do with wind coverage on your primary runway. If you have greater than 95% wind coverage on your one runway, then the FAA deems that you don't need a crosswind runway. And so if you have no other defense for having your second runway, and we don't, they won't pay to continue funding it. You can keep it if you want to, you just have to fund it on your own. So we don't meet those criteria. It's not eligible for federal funding. This has been the case since the last master plan in 2012. And all the work that we've done on that runway in the past 10 years that I've been here has come out of airport operations funding. So we've been holding that runway together, and we've been painting it, crack sealing it, because it's an important piece of infrastructure. We know that people like it. But long-term, even in today's dollars with the approach obstacles and the taxiway realignments, we already know that we can't afford 100% funded to cover those costs ourselves. And with the FAA asking when we're going to do these projects, it's becoming a little bit more difficult to support keeping that runway in their eyes if we can't afford to keep it. And so that's kind of where they're nudging us towards a master plan update to look at alternatives and for us to show the cost benefit analysis and those sorts of things. But I just want to make it clear that ineligibility is not something the city decides or I decide or anybody else decides. It's decided by a variety of factors. And then there's an AIP grant handbook that's about 600 pages long that you have to go through and see if your project's eligible or not. So ultimately, you know, if the city decides on a single runway airport, then, you know, that's not a bad thing. I mean, there are a lot of really robust, busy, single runway airports. In fact, San Diego International is the largest, busiest single runway airport in the world. They handle 250,000 operations a year, and they put 50 million passengers through that airport. Scottsdale Airport in Phoenix, Arizona hovers around 200,000 aircraft operations a year on their one runway. They've had up to 230,000 operations a year. We're at about 40,000 in a good year. If you subtract out helicopters that don't need long runways, we're probably closer to 30 or 35,000. So we've got a lot of room to grow on one runway before we even could have justification for a second runway. And even then, if it were a capacity issue, it would need to be a parallel runway, because intersecting runways don't get you any additional capacity because you can only use one at a time anyway. So, you know, I don't imagine that this airport would ever get to 200 or 250,000 operations, but it might. But even then, it would have to be our parallel runway. And maybe that's something that can come up in the master plan if we have room for a parallel runway. Where would it go? And how long would it be? And those sorts of things. So the general consensus is that it's nice to have two. I like having two. It provides me a lot of flexibility when I'm doing construction projects or if we have an aircraft accident on one versus the other. But with that comes a sizable expense. And it's not likely that the city can sustain that in the long term without some sort of an external funding source, which we don't have, and which I don't think we're going to get. Ultimately, that's not my decision. My responsibility is to alert the decision makers in the city of Salem to the looming issues so that we can be out in front of it, so that we can make decisions accordingly, and so that we can be proactive instead of reactive. When I got here 10 years ago, everything I've done in the last 10 years has been reactive to what was done before me. And so our last master plan was updated in 2012. And the primary focus at that time was preserving all of the existing infrastructure, lengthening the runway, correcting all the taxiway realignment deficiencies that still exist out there, having this airport be the next big commercial service airport in the valley. But what we've spent $14 million of federal funding since 2013 just correcting deferred pavement maintenance, deferred electrical, and other safety deficiencies on this airfield. We haven't done any of the taxiway realignments yet. And so, you know, what we've learned a decade later, especially in the last 3 years talking to the airlines, is that our current facilities, including our runway lengths, are sufficient for the level of commercial service that Salem is likely to have if an airline chooses to begin service here, primarily because they're flying different types of aircraft now. Not flying MD-80s and 727s and those types of aircraft. They're flying much more efficient regional jets and Airbuses and those sorts of things. So at the end of the story is the master planning process takes a couple of years. So if it starts in 2022, probably won't be complete until 2024. Anybody that's been through a master planning process, it's a very, very public process. It'll involve a large planning and advisory committee. It'll involve the AAC. There'll be several public open houses, and there'll be several public comment periods. We want it to be an open, transparent process. It's very important that happen that way. Several alternatives will be developed in the master plan. There'll be cost-benefit analysis. And before a final plan is adopted by the city and the FAA, the public will have ample opportunity to participate, review, and provide comment. That's what it's all about. Ultimately, my job is to manage whatever facility the city of Salem decides it wants to have. So anyone that has input, justification, ideas for funding sources to keep all the existing infrastructure in place and correct all the safety deficiencies, the master planning process and the public input period would be the place to have those discussions. And if we can make it work, then the city can make that decision for itself. So I said all of that for a couple of reasons. I wanted to provide some clarity and a little bit of information. I understand that there's a lot of details a lot of folks don't understand. And I can't explain all the details in Airport Advisory Commission meetings. I can't do it in city council workshops. I can certainly do it during the day if people want to ask me how things work and how these decisions come to be. But I wanted to at least give some of that detail tonight so that as an Airport Advisory Commissioner, if you haven't already, you're likely to be asked about this because it's out there spinning around. And a lot of people saw this workshop on Monday night. And there are folks that are upset that we didn't talk about this publicly, although we did have it as a public meeting in January at the AAC meeting, but it was not heavily attended. But obviously we have to talk to city council before we start talking to the public, because otherwise city councilors and mayors and city managers start hearing feedback from other sources besides from their own staff. And that's not the way we do business in the city of Salem. So it's not appropriate for us to have discussions with the public before we've had discussions with the city leadership. But you're going to get questions about this. You're going to be asked if you support this. You're going to be asked if you knew about this. You're going to be asked a whole bunch of questions, I would presume. This is part of serving on a public board or commission. I'm not going to put words in your mouth on how you should answer these things or any of that, but what I would say is that at this point, you know as much as everybody else knows. You saw the same presentation that the city council saw. This meeting is being recorded, so anybody that wants to watch this can watch this. And I suppose the simple answer would be that what you know is that the the city is moving towards a master planning process in a couple of years or next year to look at the future of its airport, and that during that master planning process, there'll be plenty of input from all parties, including the Airport Advisory Commission. Likely one or two of you will sit on the Planning Advisory Commission. I think the last master plan, we had 20 people on that Planning Advisory Commission. It will include neighborhood groups. It will include tenants of the airport, airport users, and certainly one or two of you. The AAC is advisory to the City Council. That's what you're here to do. We've talked about this in the past. There's not a lot of activity that you go to the council for, but this is going to be one of those times where there's going to be decision points where City Council is going to seek your input. And so you'll debate that topic, whatever it is, when we get to these decision points, and you'll take your recommendations to City Council. And of course, the public will have the opportunity to chat with you and to chat with the City Council before the City Council makes its decisions. That's how government works. So as we sit here today, there's nothing to formally support or not support. We didn't ask City Council really for any support other than to make sure they understand why we needed to move towards a master planning process. They didn't support that. Because at the end of the day, we're not here making any decisions right now. There just aren't any. Where we are today is at a decision point about the long-term future of this airport, its financial sustainability, and moving towards a master plan update to address these issues. And so that's really it. I think that's the summary I have. Certainly open to any Q&A. We can do it here in a public session if you'd like. And I'm always here Monday through Friday, 8 to 5. I'm happy to answer questions for folks or educate folks or explain details to folks. I know it's complicated. And I certainly don't want anybody to ever feel like they're left in the dark or they're being left out of a discussion or they're being end around it or anything like that. That's not how I operate. So this would be a great time if anybody has any questions about anything they've heard or any of that.
Yeah. Neil.
Listening to the workshop on Monday night, one of the council members asked about the PAPI lights for runway 34. And he was wondering, not knowing how PAPI works, if those lights could be elevated to like 75 feet. Well, the PAPIs are set alongside the runway at the aiming point to give you a 3 or 4 degree glide slope. And so elevating it would defeat the purpose because it's, like I said, it's established at the aiming point for the aircraft for the touchdown. Right. One of the comments that you made, John, about, and I thought your presentation was very good on Monday night, but one of the comments or one of the options that you gave for runway 34 was to add a threshold and turn it from a 5,200 foot runway or 100 foot down to 4,000 feet or 3,500 feet so we could move the threshold down, reinstall the PAPI and make 3-4 a viable runway for most of general aviation traffic. And I think that's certainly a good option because obviously elevating PAPI is not functional at all. The other thing that I want to address was that I keep hearing that 3-1 is the primary wind runway. And I've just started collecting data, so I don't have years worth of data that Rob Broyhill may have. But for example, looking at the National Weather Service for April, I picked 16 data points for consistency, and I will do this continually for the purpose of providing this information for the master plan. But out of the 16 times that I selected, 4:56 p.m. and 9:56 p.m., there are 16 data points. 12 of those 16 data points have the wind coming from the north or the northeast, and only 4 have the wind coming from the northwest. So 4 out of 16 support runway 3-1 as being the primary wind runway, and 12 or 3/4 of them support runway 3-4 as being the primary wind runway. I have to really be concerned about jumping on the bandwagon and accepting the fact that 3-1, but my data is limited. But I'll have more data collected by the time we, you know, start looking at master plans. But
yeah, Neil, can I interrupt you and ask you a question? Are you referring to it as the Palm Wind Runway, as
no,
opposed to the Wind Runway?
The Wind Runway.
So the Wind Runway depends on where the wind's blowing.
Yes.
In the wintertime, it's generally out of the south southwest, and in the summertime, it's generally out of the north.
And so, in the wintertime, a lot of times the wind is coming from 220. And so, if you're landing on 13220 with with any kind of a strong wind, makes a very hazardous crosswind operation if you didn't have 16 to land on. You've got a much stronger crosswind. And this information comes from one of our noted CFIs on the field. So 16 is a much safer operation during the winter, and 34 is a much safer operation. For example, on Tuesday, I landed on 34 in a 20 knot headwind, gusting to 20 knots. If I had to do that same thing landing on 31, I'd be fighting a very significant crosswind and would have been going above the stated or the stated crosswind component for the aircraft, putting me in the test pilot category. That's not my job.
Well, what I can tell you, what I know about wind coverage, and it's in our current master plan. It's online. You can certainly look it up on the city's website, or I have it here in my office. There's a wind rose on the airport data sheet that has all of the airport data, the critical design aircraft and all that. There's a wind rose on there. It talks about percent of time that the wind blows which direction at this airport. My presumption is that's collected from National Weather Service data over some number of years, I presume, and that's the number that the FAA uses to make the determinations on primary runways, crosswind runways, and that sort of thing. So that information there, it exists. It'll be redone in the next master plan update, and how that's collected and all that. I'm not an expert in that, but we have consultants that are experts in that, and through that public process, those will be the times to ask those questions on where this information comes from, how's it used, how's it assessed and all of that, but it's there. And that's—
Do you have access to that?
I'm sorry,
do you have access to that? And if so, can we get that?
Of course, yeah. I can send it out. It's on the city's website, the entire airport master plan is on the city's website if anybody ever wants to read it, but I can certainly send out the wind rose.
That would be fantastic. I'd appreciate that.
It's a pretty complicated looking thing, but you'll see what it says. What it does, though, at the top is it breaks down the percentages, which is what you really need. What you'll see is across the top, it'll show greater than 95%. I think it's 96%+ up and down the primary runway, and that's what they use for determination.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Where on the airport is this wind rose?
I'm sorry?
Where on the airport is this wind?
It's in a document. It's on the airport layout plan. It's called the airport data sheet, I believe it's called.
Okay.
I can send you a copy. Send you a copy of the entire airport data sheet if you like. It has a lot of, I think, nifty information on it. It has a lot of technical information. But the wind rose is on there.
Where is it being accumulated?
Well, again, I assume that it's taken from National Weather Service data, and the automated weather station is on the middle of the airfield on what we call Island 12. It's in between both runways, almost at the intersection of both runways, and in the middle of the airfield. So it's as close to both runways as you can get.
I see. Okay.
But again, these are all technical details that are neither here nor there today. We have it in a master plan from 2012. We'll have it in a master plan in 20 whatever, and that's the number that the FAA will use. But I'm happy to share it with anyone that wants it.
Thank you.
Other questions for John?
Concerns? Misunderstandings? Mm-hmm. Well, really, it's been very important to me that people are clear and that they feel like they're...
Yeah.
And again, I can't, Neil's dad, I can't get to that level of detail in these workshops and things like that. There's just no way. I mean, we get down into rabbit holes and we certainly can't do that. But anytime we want to discuss these things, we can.
What I took from that workshop, and I know you've discussed this with the group, and in January you touched on it, and I think, you know, you and I have probably mentioned, talked about it on one-on-one a couple times. What I think this really was kind of a problem statement. You know, you're basically, you know, starting a discussion. We're talking about, you know, what the long-term funding challenges are facing the airport, and basically any kind of successful long-term plan has to address those. And I get the, you know, I won't want to prejudge any decision, but certainly the data that was presented so far seemed to indicate that we're going to have to take a hard look at some of the stuff we've taken for granted so far with the airport. Certainly that start of that discussion, I think, raised a lot of eyebrows and got some people alarmed. And it's probably going to be incumbent on, well, I mean, I think, you know, your office in particular, but from the AAC as well, to help kind of educate folks and provide a forum where they can discuss these things. Because I don't know that all the stakeholders really have had a chance to talk or think about it. And there may not be a whole lot we can do, but at least we can be clear about what the challenges are, and if the decision has to be made one way or the other, at least people can go into it wide eyes.
Yeah, and I appreciate that, John. I think that's a good summary. Certainly, I'd rather raise the flags down to the decision makers so that we can make wise decisions. Because when the FAA asks these questions, and I don't have good answers for them, they don't like being put in a position where they have to tell you how to run your airport. It's not their airport to manage. It's not their airport to develop. They really don't want to be involved in telling you that it's time to close runways or shorten runways or pull out pappies or anything like that. They want you to make that decision. If you can't or aren't willing to make it for yourself, then they will, but that comes with a whole bunch of other issues. And so when they nudge you towards a master plan update, which is where all of these things kind of get thrashed out and we put an actual plan together, that signals to them that you are moving in the right direction, that you recognize that you have some challenges and that you're moving in the right direction to solve those challenges. And so this is really just the first step in that problem-solving effort, I think is the best way to say it. I know that there's some folks that wish that it would have been communicated differently, that we would have been alerted differently. I chose to come to the AAC in advance because I didn't want to go to council without you at least being in the loop, and it is a public meeting, so we did put it on the agenda, the economic development airport 101 presentation. We'll do a better job of reaching out to invite folks, but we certainly weren't trying to hide anything or keep anyone out or to backdoor anything at all. It's just, again, it's happened in the past where city councilors or city managers or mayors contact me and say, hey, I heard A, B, and C, and I don't know anything about that. What can you tell me about that? And it's not good for staff.
Well, that happens. I don't want to speak for anybody, but I think probably what may have raised some hackles or concerns is In the tenor of that meeting was very much that this is the plan before we've really gone through the plan.
Right.
And so I think that's probably what people are seeing, because it's clearly you've done a lot of work trying to state the problem and provide options. And
yeah, it's complicated stuff, and to try and kind of get it into a presentation sort of summary, It's difficult, and if it didn't get presented well enough or it was clear that this was just sort of a problem statement that we need to move towards a problem solving solution, that could very well be on me. Certainly not the best presenter in the world. I understand a lot of the issues and how they get solved and things, but again, I'm always happy to have people say, John, I don't understand what you're saying here. Explain it to me. Educate me. We're not at a point now where we need to disagree or battle or debate or anything like that. We can just talk. I can show you where the data is. I can show you where the information is. I can explain to you what the problems are. I can show you what the costs are to realign taxiways and to remove obstacles and to do all of these things that we have to pay for. And when you look at the numbers and they're unwieldy, and I know what my budget is, It didn't take too long to do the math. It's not that I haven't spent years trying to ask for help from downtown and other places, but there's just not money out there. There's not going to be any help. Our budget is our budget. I certainly know that raising rents isn't going to be something, a discussion that we're going to have with anybody. So we have to look at other alternatives. And when I talk to the FAA about property development, they get very concerned that we have limited property to develop too. And they like to make the point that this other runway is in your way. And by the way, you have other projects that you've been deferring for many, many years now. So those are the discussions we have in the offices. Those are tough to have.
Okay.
That's it.
Any other thoughts or comments on this point, questions? Doug, you're on mute.
Am I? There we go. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So, John, I thought the presentation was good. I think some of the people that have contacted me were concerned, I think, more about some of the city councilman's reaction, you know. And certainly that's not something you can control, but I think if I were watching it as an outsider and not somebody that sat through your presentation in January and all that, to have somebody say, oh boy, we're getting rid of general aviation, no more piston airplanes, flying electric shuttles, and oh, that's so green and cool, we love it. A lot of the questions I got today had to do with that. People were saying, what the heck are you guys smoking down there, you know?
Are we turning into an electric spaceport? And some of those
things? I mean, it was...
Yeah, there's a lot of information out there. There's and it was tricky because, again, there was what John said, which was the problem we had to talk about. But there's also a lot of city councilors, including some that have been on the council for a long time, that just aren't really connected to the airport. They don't really know kind of what's happening, the direction we're going. They're not aware of some of the changes that have happened in the last 2 or 3 or 5 years and what direction. I know there's a big hue and cry out there for lead pollution, noise pollution, and all of that. And so, you know, we're trying to head off some of those discussions by saying, hey, you know, worldwide aviation recognizes itself as a global polluter, and they're trying to make moves towards being more green, more environmentally friendly. And so we wanted to share some of those trends with the city council so that they know that we know that that's out there and that we're tracking those things and that we're going to try and implement those things as time goes on. And there's companies like Garmin out there that do modern technology advancements that we may be able to take advantage of when they get put into airplanes. And so it's important for us to let them know that we know that it's a problem, we know there's solutions coming, and that we will try and implement those things in Salem when we can, when the time's right. And certainly if we can land any of those companies here, no pun intended, pun a little bit intended, to develop some of those technologies on our property, that's a good thing for the community all the way around. It provides jobs, it provides tax revenue, and it provides cleaner, greener technology. So those are things we'd like to be able to do. So we wanted to share those things with council too. But I also understand, and this is the tricky part about workshops, is you have a limited period of time, you have a limited attention span, you have a lot of information to present, you have to figure out how to whittle it down and how to process it and put it out there so that you get out what you want to get out, but it gets muddled, it gets confusing, and people sort of take it holistically, and that's what you get is what your airport manager talking about there. Yeah, I get it. So by all means, that's why I always ask people, come and ask me what I mean, what am I talking about. But for the record, we're not smoking anything down here. Thank you for the opportunity to at least update you on that. I wanted to give a little bit of a debrief. We knew, we talked about a little bit in the January meeting that would be, when that got out there, we talked about, you know, reconfiguring the airfield or even just having, just floating that discussion of a potential alternative. But Neil made a good point. You know, one alternative that may come out in the master plan is we keep 2 runways, but they look a little different. One may stay put and one may become 3,000 feet, and that's your GA runway, or we could have a short parallel and turn that one around or something. We just don't know. There's a lot of alternatives, but that's what the process is all about. And people that think through these things, so it's not just John Pascal and not just the consultants, can say, hey, what about this option? And we can run that through the, you know, through the meat grinder, and it can become an alternative. And you can look at all, you look at the cost, you look at the social impact, you look at what property that's going to take. You look at obstacles, you look at all of those things for every alternative, every, you know, every option you might have for your airport, and then ultimately you decide on the what's called the preferred alternative. And that's the direction we go, and that's what we use as the development plan over presumably the next 20 years, although we generally update master plans every 10. So anyone that's listening, anybody that's on this call, anybody that thinks we're closing the runway next week or next month or next year, that's not the case. We'll be probably 2024, 2025 before we even get done with the master plan. By the time we implement projects, whatever those projects will be years and years and years from now. So meantime, I'll keep that runway up and operational and well cared for and well marked and well lighted, and the Pappies won't come back on. Those are probably going to be the finale in return. But otherwise, I could keep it open as a usable runway as long as possible, as long as we can afford it.
Well, John, I'd like to thank you for the work that you're doing, especially when you're stuck between a rock and a hard spot.
Thanks, I appreciate it. It's not an easy conversation to have. And I told a couple of people, as hard as it is for you to hear those things, it's difficult to say these things too. And I wish I weren't in this situation. But the FAA has what they call, what they prefer is your airport to be an all AIP eligible airport. That, you know, and it really does make sense to right size your airport to a point where everything on it is AIP eligible to be funded. And then you can really have a good, robust, well-funded airport. And then our money, our new money we can find through new developments can go towards all of the other infrastructure improvements that people want. People want a nicer terminal. People want beautification projects. People want a lot of things that I'm not able to fund because we've got such limited funds here. And so it's a business. It's a facility, but it's also a business. And I want to be able to accommodate all of those things, but we've got to find the revenue to do that. So if we can put all of the grant money towards the airfield, we only have to match some of that, and then we can put all of our revenue that we generate towards what we all want here on the airport, then eventually we'll get to a place where I think, you know, this airport has the potential. Brent DeHart made the comment that this, and it's been the case for a long, long time, this place is and can be a gold mine. It's a long, slow haul to get there. It takes a lot of money and a lot of time to change it. And so we'll see. Ultimately, it's not my decision. I'll manage it either way, do the best I can. So we'll go from there.
All right. Any other questions or comments on this topic? Doug, you look like you might be ready to say something.
I'm ready to
go to my airport manager report.
Just a second. I want to say thanks, John. I appreciate that. I know this probably started some excitement in your office, and I appreciate the feedback. It's just good to, so that we have an understanding, because people are going to get a hold of us because they know we're involved or think we're involved, and I appreciate having the information.
You're welcome. And I knew it was going to be kind of ripping the Band-Aid off. This is not unexpected. But this is, again, that's why it's important for me to make sure everybody understands this is not a decision that's been made. This is just, like, I think John summarized it really well. There's a problem statement here, a group of problems that all center around one runway, and we have to talk about that and figure out where we're going to go. So that's all. Mr. Chairman, at the end of the airport manager's report, Mr.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That was going to be the bulk of it anyway. So I feel like we can make good progress here. I know I try to keep them at an hour, but we're a little bit over. So if we can move on to the next agenda item, which would be action items. At least coming into the meeting, we didn't have any action items. So I don't think we have any action to take up right now. I guess recommend or request, or if you could reach out to the city folks, John, on your behalf, and just see if there's anything we could do about making these a little more open. That would be appreciated. Let's see. Moving on to the next agenda item, or items for commission discussion, and this is usually where Neil would give us an update on emergency preparedness. I don't know if you had anything prepared for this evening.
Let me defer that to John.
Okay.
Okay. I'm completely unprepared, but let me see what I can do here. So, and I've mentioned this a couple of times in the past, but the genesis of Neil's committee was this has now been 3.5 years ago, Neil? I think we've been working on this. Just back when Bob Ridley was still the chair. was for you folks to work with me to help gather a whole bunch of data so that I could start working on an emergency preparedness Cascadia's abduction plan for the airport. And we've done a yeoman's job of doing that. We've reached way out to a lot of agencies, state and federal agencies. On my shelf behind me, one of those white binders, you see, is the FEMA operations assessment, airport assessment and operations plan for this airport that they conducted during this three-year period on where everything will park and where everything will be loaded and unloaded should we have that type of an event. But at this point, Neil and Greg Walsh, the city emergency manager, and I have paused all of the work in that committee just because there's competing priorities. We've got everything we need. At some point, I have to actually start working on putting a written plan together. It's sort of on my work plan, but it's kind of down the priority list a little bit. So we're just kind of in a pause state right now. What we'll probably do is, as I go through putting this plan together, we find holes, questions that we need answered, and those sorts of things. We'll reach out to these other agencies to help fill in those gaps and things. But that's really where we are now. Neil and I have talked about it a little bit here over the last couple of months, and kind of where we are. And so there's just not a lot of work left to do. And reaching off the airport at this point with everything that's going on with the pandemic and a lot of these EOCs and other agencies are busy with lots of other stuff. So we don't want to be the pesky Salem airport that's bothering them with our needs and things like that. I think we have enough information now. In fact, I've got a stack of stuff on the bottom of the shelf that you can't see. So all the stuff that Neil's collected for me for 3.5 years. So we're good for the time being.
All right. Well, then I guess at the next meeting, I won't pick on Neil until we have more information there. Are there any other items for the commission to discuss today or anything else? All right. Seeing none, the last item on the agenda is the chair's report. And I don't have anything particular to say that I haven't already said. I guess, you know, I think the main thing is we've got, looks like in the next year or so, we might be starting work on a master plan. And I think we may at that point need to be thinking about the cadence of our meetings, if we need to do additional work outside of the scope of our usual form meetings. But beyond that, I don't have anything else to say. So if there's no more, I'd adjourn the meeting. All right. Well, meeting adjourned. Thank you very much. And we'll talk again in another 3 months, if not
soon.
Thanks,
John. My Garmin products are fantastic.
You should have plugged.
Know where you're at.
See you all soon. Thank you.
Thanks.
All right.
Okay, bye.
Thank you. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.